Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community with convenient locations throughout northern New England. World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here. And from
the Elm Street Group at Morgan Stanley, working with clients to create enduring financial value and a lasting impact through sustainable investing solutions. A local wealth management team with global insights. Find out more at the Elm Street Group at morganstanley.com.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The movies, summer is blockbuster time. Big, showy films with lots of superheroes, chase scenes, and explosions. And this summer absolutely follows that script, but there's also plenty of fare for moviegoers who don't need to see something blowing up every 10 minutes. Comedies about girlfriends out in the town, complicated but heartwarming stories about family, and some films that make statements about racism in America. So today in The Exchange, pop some popcorn, grab a comfy chair. It's our summer movie show. What's pulling you into the movies this summer? Or making you stay away? The Exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Our guests in the studio are Tom Cook, film professor at Keene State College. Tom, welcome back. Good to see you.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Amy Diaz, editor at The Hippo, where she reviews movies. And Amy, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Well, Amy, to start with you, what's the one big movie that is the summer movie to see this year?
Well, oh, geez.
So I know it's a matter of opinion, but still.
So far, I guess by default, I think Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 has been kind of the best of these big summer blockbuster movies. This came out at the beginning of May, stars Chris Pratt, Zoe Saldana. You know, I loved the first one. It was so fun and loose, and everyone was just sort of having a good time. I kind of feel like this one's a little more produced, but it was still pretty fun.
Remind listeners who didn't see Guardians of the Galaxy why it was such a big hit the first time
around. Okay, this is kind of a, I guess, an offshoot Marvel, you know, group of characters. They were, it's one of these movies where you get kind of a group of people coming together, including a large tree who only says, "I am Groot," and a small talking raccoon. And, you know, they kind of went off and saved the galaxy. And now they're saving the galaxy again. It was the first one was just really, and maybe because of an expectations thing, you know, I didn't really expect much of these characters I'd never heard of, but it was so much fun. And it was, you know, very kind of what you expect from Marvel, very light and a little bit quippy, but, you know, still kind of good action and good cartoony comic book, you know, excitement.
And superheroes, but not sort of muscly guys or gals in tight suits, superheroes that are kind of adorable.
Yes. Well, especially the raccoon, although, you know, he gets very angry when he's reminded of that. In this one,
that he's cute.
Yes. In this one, the tree, the I am Groot, Groot is now a smaller tree, which is also very cute. But they play it for laughs. It's still pretty well put together, just a little more produced, I thought.
Well, let's hear a little bit from Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 from Marvel.
Any tape out there? I want to put some tape over the death button.
Nobody has any tape.
Not a single person has tape.
You have an atomic bomb in your bag. If anybody's gonna have tape, it's you.
I have to do everything.
You are wasting a lot of time.
That's a really bad sign.
Okay, so again, that's Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. I am Groot, as Amy said.
That kind of
sums
it up, yeah. That clip, actually.
Right, exactly.
Won't And even from that clip, with both of them, for those of us who are a little bit older, you get to hear a lot of the old 80s tunes.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that, because that's another thing that I've heard a lot about the first movie is great soundtrack.
Oh, yeah.
So what about that, Tom?
Oh, I think that's one of the things. It's about a draw, and I try not to be negative about it, but face it, Hollywood is all about the dollar. And so it's how do you get... we're going to be talking about sequels and things like that coming up, and so there's a built-in audience. But when you get such great soundtracks, which is what the original Guardians had, and then you can build on the second one, it's just a draw, so I can go see in a great theater, you know, some of these songs that I remer loving so much.
So parents walk out of the movie theater going, I don't know why, but I like that movie.
Kids these days, the stuff you listen to.
So how about you, Tom? How would you answer that question I asked Amy? Is there one big, big movie that you just got to see this summer?
I've been a little disappointed with some of them. I agree with Amy that I loved Guardians so much. I think I went in with a bit too much of an expectation. I still thought it was a lot of fun. The one I'm hoping for and have really been looking forward to opens this Thursday, and it's Wonder Woman.
Yes.
I think that's, I'm hoping that's going to be as great as it looks.
Now, why is this such a big deal for you? Because there's been a lot of hype about this movie.
Right.
I mean, Wonder Woman's been around for a long time. This isn't new.
Absolutely. Part of it, it's internal for me. I used to work at DC Comics, and so I worked real closely with George Perez on the Wonder Woman series for quite a while, so I'm very familiar with Diana and everything. Been waiting for a good iteration while I loved the TV show and grew up with that. DC's been obviously behind the ball for quite a while. Marvel's taken over the movie industry, and so DC's now trying to catch up with all of these other films. But Wonder Woman's been one who's been noticeably missing, both as an action character, and while I don't have girls, I've got both boys. You know, a lot of my friends do, and I'm looking for a strong female character that young women can look up to.
Now, Wonder Woman is not your, well, they're never your average superhero, I guess, but she's got kind of a mystical backstory, right, Tom?
Absolutely. She's born of the gods, and so she's not only super strong, but she has the lariat, the magic lariat, which will make you tell the truth in an invisible plane and all that. And so that allows for a mysticism behind it. So I think when you go see this, you're going to see some great battles and some terrific special effects as well.
Well, and in this movie, you see her backstory and how she becomes Wonder Woman, and then she arrives in sort of World War I era Europe. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay, let's hear a little bit from Wonder Woman from DC Comics.
What are you?
I am Diana of Themyscira, daughter of Hippolyta.
In the name of all that is good, your wrath upon this world.
Okay, so there's Wonder Woman giving the bad guy what for. What do you think about this movie, Amy?
Oh, I am so excited. I'm excited and a little bit nervous, like, don't mess this up.
Right, yeah.
It stars Gal Gadot. I think I said that right. She actually first appeared as Wonder Woman in Batman versus Superman. And I went back last night and watched her scenes in that movie, which were so fun. And she really was... You know, that movie was not the best, and it was kind of dark and down, and she really brought energy, not that quippy kind of Guardians humor, but like a sense of lightness and fun to it. I've loved all the trailers. It really looks fun. I'm really excited for this one.
So she's done this role before?
Yes, just so once before, she was kind of a small part. So the Batman versus Superman movie kind of introduced, as we were talking about before, introduced a bunch of these potential DC movies coming out in the future, and this was one of them. And so, you know, like I said, when she kind of comes on the screen at the end of Batman versus Superman, spoiler alert, she is so much fun. And that scene just kind of brings kind of what you think this could be. And so I'm really excited for this.
Do you want to jump in, Tom?
Oh, no, my only comment being, with Marvel really kind of leading the way, DC's finally catching up. We've had the Batmans and the Supermans and the Batman versus Superman. Now we'll have Wonder Woman. I'm not sure if Aquaman, but all of these Justice League characters whom we'll be talking about later on. Everything's really kind of building up to these team efforts so that if you're a fan of any one of these, you're going to have something to watch this summer.
Well, and I want to talk about superheroes because that's a staple of summer for sure. But let me also remind our listeners, you can join us. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. It's our summer movie show today in The Exchange. We're looking at what's a must-see this summer and maybe what's an avoid. The Exchange number again for you to join us with your questions, comments, and what you've seen already is 1-800-892-6477. So, okay, superheroes, staple of summer. Amy, who are the best superheroes on the silver screen this year, besides Wonder Woman, which you both are excited about?
Well, so the big superhero movies, Guardians, Wonder Woman, Excuse me. And then Spider-Man Homecoming. So this is kind of a continuation of the Marvel Universe. He also had, we've already seen him too. It's Tom Holland is playing Spider-Man. And he was in Captain America Civil War playing that role and was really fun. I believe it was the Captain America Civil War. Yeah. And was really fun. Also brought kind of a nice bit of humor. And they've kind of taken Spider-Man back to his teenage years, which is, I kind of think, when the character works really well. So I'm actually looking forward to this. This one comes out July 7th.
You wonder, though, how many Spider-Man movies can they make, Tom? Well, I'm starting to lose track here.
They all keep... I thought Tobey Maguire was perfect in both roles. I ended up liking, you know, some of the newer iterations. But it's about, you know, attracting new audiences. And I guess Marvel decided that kids these days, at like 10 or 12 or something, probably couldn't relate to some of the early ones, the Garfield ones even. And so time to reboot with Holland. I've always been a big Spider-Man fan, so looking forward certainly to that. But I have to jump in and also recommend a brand new superhero that we're going to be seeing is Captain Underpants. So got to go see Captain Underpants.
Okay, so I have boys, so I have read those books endlessly many, many times. But just to remind people who aren't familiar with the joys of Captain Underpants.
Captain Underpants is just a silly, lighthearted, family-oriented potty humor kinds of things about a group of kids in, I think they're like elementary school, who eventually convince, after talking through some things, their principal that he's really a superhero. And so it's all very kind of lighthearted. This is going to be animated with some fun voiceovers that you're going to hear. But they've been out. Captain Underpants has been out for 15 years or so, hasn't it?
The books, yes.
Yeah, the books
they've been
have.
Around for quite a while.
So I'm looking forward to that, just as kind of a guilty pleasure.
Right, it is a guilty pleasure. So two little boys, you know, older elementary school kids, and they decide to, they figure out a way to make their sort of dorky principal into this dorky superhero, and then he gets out of control.
And I think it's Ed Helms as maybe the principal, and the principal. Kevin Hart is one of the kids.
Oh, really?
I didn't know
Kevin Hart.
So.
That'll be fun.
Yeah, that will be fun. Amy, who else among the superhero crowd are you looking forward to seeing this summer? I love that you put Captain Underpants in that category, Tom, by the way. Go ahead.
Well, not quite a superhero, but kind of a similar, you know, a big, bigger-than-life character, Cars 3. This is the Pixar movie. Owen Wilson voicing Lightning McQueen, and he's probably like a superhero for the younger set, and that's really my interest. I have to admit, I'm not a huge fan of the Cars, the two previous Cars movies, but I'm pretty sure this one is rated G, and that is so hard to find. As the mom of a much younger moviegoer, it is hard to find those G-rated movies, so I'm excited for one coming out this summer, you know, maybe something me and my daughter can go see together.
Well, that's an important point, Amy, and, you know, speaking as a parent, you've got young kids, and you're right. It's almost impossible to find a G-rated movie these days.
It is. It's really tough. And, you know, even PG movies, there's a pretty big range
of
what PG can mean. I found out I took my daughter to Moana and there was a scary part. And, you know, it was like, okay, that was kind of too soon for her. So, you know, I always make a point of seeing these movies first, which, you know, luckily I can for my job, but it's tough to know. And so I'm always happy when I see a G rating. I'm like, oh, that one's probably good. You know, that's probably about the level of your kind of, you know, your little kid TV shows.
Yeah, I remember walking out with a crying preschooler of Finding Nemo because the shark was just too scary.
Well,
so
and you never,
never
know either. Yeah.
Right.
Well, and if you're a parent, it's tough to supervise them properly, because do you want to see it yourself first and then have to, for want of a better term, have to sit through it again so that, okay, that's a good one, I guess I'll watch it again so that my kid can see it. So it is tough to find truly family-oriented fare. And I think we rely on the Disneys and the, you know, the Pixars, same company,
Anything
to do
else,
those things.
Tom, in the category of truly family fair.
I
think Amy's absolutely right. It's hard to find stuff that's good for the younger set.
Sure, I know. I think you're right. Amy's right that Cars, to my knowledge, is rated G, and so that's going to be something you don't have to worry about. My understanding is Despicable Me 3 is coming out soon. Never crazy about that, but I like Carell and the animation. Those are usually pretty lighthearted and not terribly frightening, I don't think. But again, summer usually... you'll have a couple of those because you do have to be able to get the kids into something that they can see. But then I think it really goes for action adventure, most of the
Well, somebody the once said, and I don't know if it was you, Amy, but someone said summer movies, if you could broadly categorize them. They're made for 14-year-old boys.
That sounds about right.
Stuff blowing up, car chases.
Or, you know, just the widest possible audience. You know, that's, I saw Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales this weekend. Not a great movie, but I kind of felt like what this movie is for is if you have to take a wide age range of people to the movies, you know, a 12-year-old, grandma, great-grandma, everyone in between, okay, you can take them all to this. And no one will love it, but no one will have a terrible time.
That's not a ring of endorsement.
You're not going to see that on the poster,
right,
probably.
Exactly.
Again, our number for you to join us with your endorsements, or if you want to throw a few tomatoes at some movies you've seen, that's fine too. The number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. It's NHPR Exchange. You can comment there as well. Or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. So kids' movies, superhero movies. Summertime, Amy, is also a time when Hollywood tends to pull out sequels. Now, you've mentioned a couple of those already, Guardians of the Galaxy 2, for example. But what's good in the sequel category this year?
Well, I don't know about good. Actually, here's one I'm legitimately excited about, and that is War for the Planet of the Apes. This one comes out in July. Andy Serkis returns as Caesar, you know, doing that kind of great motion capture performance as an ape. Woody Harrelson plays, I think, kind of based on the trailers, the human villain. And I'm really excited for this one. These have been a really pleasant surprise. I don't think I was ever excited for the first one, and that one was great. And then I can't remember the order anymore. Rise of the Planet of the Apes, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, and now we have War for the Planet of the Apes. But it looks really promising. These have been really, you know, action movies, sure, but they're kind of smart. And they have a lot to say about, you know, tribalism and the way people are in groups and what happens when people are under stress. So those have been really fun movies.
That's really interesting because I just see a trailer for that and I think, okay, sure. There's another, you
Talking
know, whatever.
Apes.
But that sounds meaningful.
It is. And really strong performances, really amazing motion capture. You kind of believe that you're watching animals walking around, walking and talking and riding horses. That's how far the technology has gone. And that's how good I think Andy Serkis, who does a lot of this kind of work, you know, he was in the Lord of the Rings movies. He's just really great at this. You know, I've always thought, I don't know how, he needs an Oscar.
Well, I was surprised to see that the new Planet of the Apes movie is getting so much positive press, Tom. I mean, in a way, it kind of seems worn out, right? Again, haven't we done this already many times?
Well, and if we're talking about sequels, I think we can talk about remakes in much the same vein. I was of that opinion when this new reboot of Planet of the Apes came out. I was such a fan of the old Charlton Heston ones. Oh, do we really need to see this again? And I was, just like Amy, I was dumbfounded at the special effects. I really believed these apes were working around and that Serkis did a great job. I thought Serkis should have gotten an Oscar for his portrayal of Gollum. But what these new ape movies do, and this is what I love about smart movies, not that I'm necessarily calling all of the apes ones smart, but they do weave a subtext of community, talking about social rightness and morality into this, because this is about men going in and destroying their environment there, and Caesar, who is the lead ape, Andy Serkis's character, has to try to lead his, you know, and protect his group. So that's what I really enjoy most about the Planet of the Apes. It's good action, but it's also got a little storyline going too.
Cultural commentary
there.
So I have to ask you real quick about one movie that also has gotten a lot of play. Baywatch. Speaking of reviving things. Now, I remember when this was on TV. Again, I feel like I'm going to ask this all hour. Why are we doing Baywatch, Tom?
It's about the Bucks. And not only can it's a lot of TNA going on there. I was, and this is me getting old, I think, because everybody else, I went to see this last week, and it was a pretty packed theater, and everybody was loving it, and that was fine. I'm a big fan of The Rock. I'm looking for the Zac Efron movie that I will like, because I seem to kind of like him. But it's all about beautiful bodies, not just female, but also male beautiful bodies. And you can weave some action in there. And it also has that built-in audience, the old Baywatch fans.
Well, let's head into the break by playing a little clip of Baywatch.
Welcome to Baywatch. Our team is the elite of the elite. We're the heart and soul of this very beach. Come on, Pete, make my pecs a little bigger.
All right. Well, that's a predictable clip from Baywatch. Coming up, we'll find out what New Hampshire's independent movie houses will be playing this summer. And we'll hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Stick around. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, it's our summer movie show. What's a must-see and what's a maybe avoid? The Exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Send email to exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Again, the number for you to join us with your comments, observations, praise, or criticism for some of the summer movies you've seen, 1-800-892-6477. And Tom Cook, Amy Diaz, I want to talk about smaller films, documentaries, what to expect at New Hampshire's independent theaters this summer. To help us out with that now is Jeff Somerville, Operations Director at Red River Theaters in Concord. And Jeff, it's really nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Well, and you could probably talk for an hour about all the summer stuff that's coming up at your independent movie house. But what are some of the biggies that are coming up, Jeff, that you're looking forward to?
Probably the biggest thing is The Big Sick, which is written by a real-life couple, Kamal Nanjiani from television show Silicon Valley, and his wife, Emily Gordon. It's about how they came to be together. Kamal is, he and his wife, he's a Muslim, and his wife is white. And his parents were not a big fan of their relationship, and they wrote the script for the movie. It's also directed by Michael Showalter.
Wait, his parents wrote the script for
the movie? No, I'm sorry. They together, the Kamal and his wife.
Wow. Oh, okay. Together. Yeah. And the parents, you know, they're from a traditional family.
Yeah.
They want him to have an arranged marriage. They're always introducing him to these nice Pakistani girls.
Yep.
And he's fallen in love with this blonde person.
And Zoe Kazan plays his wife Emily in the film, and I guess she gets sick at some point, and it sort of brings them back together, brings him to her parents as well.
All right, well, let's hear a little bit from that movie. I'm glad you mentioned it, Jeff, because this is getting a lot of buzz. This is from The Big Sick.
I have to tell you something, babe. I've been dating this girl. She's white.
A white girl?
Okay, you can't look like you and yell white girl.
It's okay. We hate terrorists.
All right, again, that's from The Big Sick. And Amy, this is getting a lot of attention, The Big Sick, for sort of hitting some of these cultural stereotypes head on. You know, in that clip, if you missed it, they say, you know, a white girl. And then they say, no, it's okay. It's okay to everybody in the restaurant. We're not terrorists.
Yeah, you know, this is probably one of the few movies where I was excited when the trailer came out. I was looking, I was like, oh, it's finally here. This looks really fun. Holly Hunter and Ray Romano play, I think, her parents. It looks like a really fun movie. I like the story about it. It's just, and it's Michael Showalter. I also like him. He's the director. This just, you know, it's great to get other kinds of stories out there. I think this is kind of can fall into that romantic comedy category, which is nice to see when they do something different with that, too. That's definitely a genre that needs some new blood, new things happening there.
Rom-com with a twist, yeah. Do you want to jump in on that, Tom, at all?
I think you're definitely going to see this nominated, if not walk away with the gold at the end of the year when the Oscars come around. You mentioned Holly Hunter and Ray Romano. I've found, and I think one of the reasons of the, like I know so many famous actors, but I think one of the things that they like to do is they'll do a big box office. Holly Hunter was in Superman recently. And so they'll get a bunch of money available so they can go do these more, for want of a better term, meaningful and important films. They don't have to take the big paycheck for something like The Big Sick, so they can do something that really has some kind of social conscience.
Yeah. What else, Jeff, what else are you looking forward to?
Well, as far as bigger films, right now on Friday we're opening The Lovers, which stars Deborah Winger and Aidan Gillen from Game of Thrones. And actually, a little make note about that, there's a young man named Chris Stinson who's from Concord, and he was the producer on the film.
Wow.
So, which is pretty interesting. And Churchill also opens. Brian Cox plays Winston Churchill. And it follows the final 96 hours leading up until D-Day. Also, not a feature film, but there's this interesting little thing we've never done before called the 100 Words Film Festival that's playing on June 16th. And the festival, the object is to write a short film that lands at exactly 100 words of dialogue.
And 100 words
exactly,
of dialogue.
And that's you can only use 100. You got to use exactly 100. And there's a neat little thing that they do where there's a counter on the screen that's showing how many words they're at before they get to the end of the film, which
that's
is
less than a tweet,
too.
Isn't it?
It's not much, yeah. I don't do a lot of Twitter.
I try to remind my beginning film students that they used to make good movies without dialogue,
yeah.
So it can be done.
Silent movies,
absolutely.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I'm interested in the Churchill movie because, one, I love history, but also Amy and Tom, there's other history movies this summer, too. I mean, that's when the movies sometimes really shine. They take a period in history and they really play it up for us.
One big one from one of my favorite directors coming out, Christopher Nolan, is Dunkirk.
Right. Yeah. Watched the trailer for that last night.
Yeah, I think that looks terrific.
Well, and talk about like a great trailer. I think the first time I saw that trailer, I actually got chills. So I'm very excited about that one with Tom Hardy, Kenneth Branagh, and Mark Rylance, who I love. He's been in a lot. He was in The Bridge of Spies and was in Wolf Hall on PBS. And so I'm really excited to see him on screen.
Well, and Tom, for people who aren't as big a history buff as maybe some of the people in this room, just remind us what Dunkirk was.
Right. Well, as part of a battle, my understanding is that this film is all about Allied efforts to get a group of soldiers out of the area, Dunkirk, during a war. And so this is all the huge effort to try to salvage. It's kind of a huge Saving Private Ryan's troop or something like that, I guess, because all of them are trapped in the war. And Nolan does, I think, a really good job of, while it is going to be a large group of people, you mentioned a couple of the actors, I love Ewan McGregor, it'll obviously focus on a couple of important individuals kind of representing the larger group.
And well,
I'm sure
ahead.
We're going to be getting into, again, another opportunity to talk about the war effort, you know, what war does to individuals and society. So I always look forward to something from Nolan.
Right. And, you know, not only is the movie beautifully shot, it's a painful, horrible story. And the thing that really just gets these soldiers is they can see Britain. You know, they can see it from where they are, and they know that they're caught there.
I often ask myself when either a war movie comes out or another boxing movie, does this really need to be done again? Haven't we seen this before? And so I'm always pleased to see either a different take or it done again, but really, really well.
Yeah. Well, just a personal note, I was in Dunkirk a month ago,
oh, cool.
The town itself, and I was looking for like old sets and, you know, things like that, and there was nothing left. But the people did say that the movie crew was fabulous. And that they really enjoyed having the movie people there. The number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter, NHPR Exchange. By the way, check back at our website later today for a list of the movies we talked about and any film-related events in New Hampshire. You can join us now, too, at 1-800-892-6477. So, this is a silly question. I'm going to ask you anyway, Jeff. How is it decided that Churchill, which is a biopic about Churchill and World War II, goes to smaller movie houses like yours, Red River, and Dunkirk goes to the big places? How is that even figured out?
It's based on studio and, I mean, I guess how much money they think certain things are going to make. Because a lot of times you'll see like a little indie thing that you thought would be indie that's sort of a breakout hit and they end up going with a wider release. These little movies will open in New York and LA and then kind of spread slowly around the country. So we're not even sure a lot of the times exactly when we're going to play them. We know there's a little bit of a window we're actually really lucky to have The Big Sick on the national opening. But mostly it's just like we're not going to play anything that Warner Brothers makes. So we're dealing with much smaller studios that don't have as wide a reach as a lot of the big time guys do.
That's interesting. Do you want to comment on that too, Amy? How it's decided if something's going to play big or play small?
Well, I think, Christopher Nolan was the key word there. That was a big director. And so that makes sense that it would hit big screens. I'm actually curious about something like An Inconvenient Sequel. This is another Al Gore documentary. So is something like that considered a big movie or is that considered an independent?
Right. Do you know, Jeff?
I think it's probably, I'm not sure who's distributing that, but it really, it's sort of dependent on that. Like there's something later in the summer coming out that Steven Soderbergh directed called Logan Lucky. That's from Bleecker Street, which is a smaller studio, but that could get a big wide release. Daniel Craig's in it. And Soderbergh tends to kind of go back and forth between the indie world and the big, like he did the Ocean's 11 movies.
What was he saying? One for me, one for them?
Yeah, he sort of, and he actually supposedly like 3 or 4 years ago retired. And not surprisingly, he's back because they never retire.
What about Keene State, Tom? You folks must have sort of summer festivals or things like that where you pull either old movies that people want to see again or some of these smaller independent films that Jeff's talking
about. We have the Putnam Arts Center, and every week the students actually run the Film Society, and they'll get, again, they vote on it, so we tend to see the big major motion pictures coming there. We have at the end of the year the Student Film Festival, and then throughout the summer we have smaller venue films coming in. If you don't mind, I wanted to ask Jeff, and I'm a huge fan, obviously, of Hollywood. I'm mainstream Hollywood is where I was trained, etc. But there's such an importance to having the opportunity and the venues for either smaller films or independent films that the general audience wouldn't have an opportunity to see. I was wondering if you've seen a drop-off with the advent of streaming and everything like that. When video came along and with streaming, is that hitting our independent theaters as hard as it does larger theaters?
I'm glad you asked that. I wanted to talk to you guys about that, too. Okay. Go ahead, Jeff.
I don't think we've really seen that yet.
Okay,
I'm not sure our audience is, hip to the streaming situation at this point in time. Yeah, and I think there's also, like, it's coming to a theater like Red River is a different experience than going to a Regal or a Cinemagic. I like to say it's you're going to have people who come to our theater want to watch the movie. They're not there to, you know, be out with their friends or to munch on popcorn. And, I mean, our popcorn's really good and everybody enjoys it. But it's not the main draw, to get out for the evening. They want to experience the film. They don't want to hear, you know, kids talking and want to see the cell phones on. They want to pay attention to what's happening on the screen and walk out of the theater having, you know, had a positive experience, or they've learned something or felt something and not just been entertained, you know, just for an evening.
Well, I'm glad you asked that question. I want to hear from you, Tom, and you too, Amy, on that phenomenon, because you're right. A lot of people feel like this is sort of yet another golden age of television. There's a lot of really great TV on, and now you can stream it, you can binge watch it, you can watch, you know, 7 episodes at once, and you don't have to leave your house. And with all respect to Jeff's popcorn, you know, the popcorn home is a lot cheaper. So, Amy, what's the competition like now from streaming from Netflix and other providers to the big movie houses?
Well, you know, what I've noticed just locally is that there seems to be more of an effort being made on making movie going to the theater an experience. Also, I've been to a lot of movies lately where you see a little thing right before the show with actors from the show thanking you for coming to see the movie in the theater. Yes.
I haven't seen that.
I've seen this, I think, particularly at AMC theaters where you have, I remember for Snatched, Amy Schumer and Goldie Hawn saying, thank you very much for coming to see this in a theater. I think that there is an effort being made to make, you know, you've noticed not just the reclining chairs, but the big puffy, almost lazy boy chairs. more theaters are offering beer and wine. The food selection just in general has gotten bigger. There are more reserved seating, which I have mixed feelings about. A lot more buy your seats early online. I kind of feel like there's this whole push towards, like, it's not just going to a theater with a bunch of kids. You know, it's an experience. It's a whole evening out.
I got caught up by the reserve your seats in advance, I don't know, about a year or two ago, because that is relatively new.
And it is.
You know, at the last minute, we thought, we have a minute. Let's go. And
I think it's
and they said,
those
no, you
things.
Can't come in.
Exactly.
And what do you mean? We've got money. We want to buy a ticket.
And I think we're all still getting used to, like, how the reserved seating works,
yeah,
where you go in and you have to sit in the seat you picked and you can't sit with your friends. I think it's still in the, you know, learning phase.
Right.
It'll be interesting to see if it's a thing that sticks around or not.
Right. For me, going to the movies is a spontaneous decision.
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness. You know, that thing fell through. Let's go to a movie. And to have to reserve and think about my seat, and I'm just... I just want to show up.
It's not Broadway yet. Yeah.
Right. Although the prices, you know. What do you think, Tom, since you mentioned it, the competition from, you know, some pretty excellent television?
Absolutely. Well, I think as a venue for distribution, originally, if you think back to when home video first came out, even when television first came out, the studios were running scared, thinking, oh, my goodness, nobody's going to go to the movies anymore. And then they suddenly realized it's really just another venue for distribution, that once they've gone to the theaters, you'll see it on television, or you'll see it on home video, or you'll be able to stream it. What I've found, at least in my minor observation of it, is that I think the way it's affected motion pictures is exactly what both Amy and Jeff have said. From movies, we now expect a spectacle. So I think we're seeing these much bigger movies, which does kind of feed into our discussion today of superheroes, Star Wars coming out annually. I think we're expecting, if we're going to go out and spend $40 to get in and then another $40 at the box office and have a big, huge screen there, I want to be blown away. And I think that's how a lot of this media distribution is affecting motion pictures.
Amy? Well, and I actually think that that's kind of part of this summer season. These movies you're seeing is that a lot of them are trying to be movies that you have to see on a big screen. You have to see the right. openings of Guardians of the Galaxy, where they're fighting in this big circle and it kind of the camera moves around. Like, you know, I think that's part of what this season tries to do with its movies, that it's not going to be as spectacular if you, yes, when you watch it on your iPhone or your, you know, even your TV a couple months later.
Right.
But Laura, maybe to more directly address your question, I think if I understood you correctly, I might also say that a lot of these other venues give actors in particular, but producers, an opportunity to spend a lot more time. You're not stuck with a two-hour thing. You can do a Breaking Bad, you can do a House of Cards, and spend a lot of time telling longer stories. So I think for the industry, that's one of the real advantages of these, of Netflix doing their own thing, of Hulu doing their own thing.
Well, and people say, and I'm not an entertainment connoisseur, but people do say the quality is very, very good.
Absolutely.
You know, some excellent plots, some excellent writing, some excellent acting.
Women.
So, yeah, women doing things. How about that?
Women get to do things on TV, which is nice.
Jeff, back to you. Mm-hmm. Other movies that, you know, you really want to get out there that may not be getting the buzz of a, you know, of a Guardians of the Galaxy or a Wonder Woman.
There's another movie that we're playing called Beatrice at Dinner, starring Salma Hayek and Connie Britton. It's about a holistic medicine practitioner who attends a wealthy client's dinner party after her car breaks down. That's coming up later. There's also...
That sounds like some interesting twists.
Yeah,
could happen
along
the way.
Of women writers and directors and getting things to do, Sofia Coppola has a movie called The Beguiled that comes out later this year with Nicole Kidman, Elle Fanning, Kirsten Dunst, and Colin Farrell.
Okay, so hang on that one, because that also is on a lot of the lists of top movies you must see, and that's running at Red River.
Hopefully. That's one of those things we don't always know exactly... You know, what's going to come, and we're almost like week to week at times. We're pretty lucky, like I said earlier, to get something, you know, with a date that's locked in, you know, where we know exactly when it's going to be there and we can program for it.
Well, and Beguiled, I watched the trailer for it. It's about a union, during the Civil War, a union soldier who gets wounded, and he happens to be wounded near this school for girls. Young ladies in Mississippi. So they take him in, and obviously you can imagine that different things happen.
He stirs the pot.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. Anything else, Jeff, before we let you go, that is coming to Red River this summer that you want to make sure folks know about?
For Market Days, we're going to be doing Goldfinger outdoors on June 23rd.
Classic old movies, yes.
Dusk. And Market Days, we usually try to do something that, go way back, something like that. Also, interesting, Market Days weekend, we're doing Monterey Pop, which is a documentary about the classic concert that actually was preceded Woodstock, and Jimi Hendrix and Janis Joplin. A lot of big musical acts got their big breaks there. And for the Mamas and the Papas, it was their second to last.
Speaking of soundtracks that Jeff was talking about earlier. All right, and Jeff, we will let you go, but anything that we've talked about today in terms of movies or film events, we'll put on our website. People can check it out later today when we get everything on there. Jeff, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Jeff Somerville with Red River Theaters, and more in a moment.
Peterborough poet Becky Denison Sokolariou writes about her childhood in her new poetry collection, a time, she says, when young girls were often told what they could not do.
Looking back, I think I sabotaged that. Sabotaged the directions that came at us.
I'm Peter Biello. I spoke with Sokolariou about her new collection of poetry on the bookshelf from NHPR. Subscribe to this and all of NHPR's podcasts wherever you get your podcasts.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, it's our 2017 summer movie show, and let's hear from you. What's going to pull you to the movies this summer? Or what might make you stay away? The Exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. One more time, the number, 1-800-892-6477. Tom Cook is here, film professor at Keene State College, along with Amy Diaz, editor at The Hippo, where she reviews movies. And both of you, you know, we've talked a lot about the blockbusters and the superheroes and the sequels. And we heard from Jess Somerville about some of the indie films and so forth. I personally like to go to the movies and laugh, Tom, because my work is very serious most of the time. So right. What do the movies have in store for me this summer? Just a good old comedy.
Well, again, so much of it is action. I think we talked a little bit earlier about Baywatch is out there. If you don't mind, it's not a hard R, but there's a lot of...
It's pretty R.
It's pretty crude. And that's the appeal there, I think, is people are looking for that. Boy, I think for comedy, we had the Amy Poehler and Goldie Hawn Snatched. It was a little cruder than I expected, but part of my, because I do movie reviews on local cable and on radio, and part of my opportunity, or what I try to do, is kind of personally scan the audience. And I was one of two males in an audience of about 150.
Oh, my goodness, really?
Everybody
this is
was
a mother-daughter movie,
absolutely,
by the way.
Everybody was having a great time. I think it's kind of a girls' night out flick, or with the two of them, and it's even kind of an action adventure flick. I love Goldie Hawn. I'm learning to like Amy Schumer. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And there's an Amy Poehler too.
I thought
so
too.
So
one of the two. So while I wasn't crazy about it, boy, the audience sure seemed to like it, and lots of laughs going on there. Boy, of just straight out comedies, I'm not thinking of a lot for this summer. I'm just struck with how much action and reboots they are. We haven't talked about The Mummy much yet, but that's one of them too. But
which is definitely not
a lot
the
of laughs
category.
Going on
no.
there. Yeah.
Well, you
go
know,
ahead,
Amy Poehler does have one coming out this week or this summer that I'm really excited about called The House. I think it's coming out June 30th with Will Ferrell. They play a couple who has daughter. They're so excited. She's gotten into the college she wanted, and then they realize they cannot afford it. So they decide to open an illegal casino in their house. That mix to me looks fantastic. Yeah. The trailer looks very funny, and so I'm very excited about that one.
Yeah, that's a trailer that I watched twice, actually, because it was amusing. They don't have enough money for their beloved daughter to go to college, so they open up this illegal casino, and all sorts of stuff happens, and the neighbors start to wonder what's going on.
And this is definitely, I'm pretty sure this is another R-rated movie.
Yeah.
There's a couple of, and actually a couple of kind of female-focused R-rated movies, comedies coming out this summer. There's also two kind of ladies' night ones. One is called Rough Night with Scarlett Johansson, Zoe Kravitz, Ileana Glazer, Kate McKinnon, National Treasure, in my opinion, and Jillian Bell. They're at like a bachelor party, and then kind of a Weekend at Bernie's situation happens when their male entertainer unfortunately dies, and then they have to try to figure out what to do with him. So that looks, that looks like it has potential. Kate McKinnon and Jillian Bell, I really like those two actresses. They're really great comic actresses, so I'm really excited about them at least.
Well, let's play a little bit from Rough Night, as you said, with Scarlett Johansson.
We don't get to see each other a lot because we're all so busy with our lives.
Hey, but what are you doing for work these days?
Well, singer-songwriter is the dream. Party clown is the reality.
But this weekend's all about us, just like old times.
Okay, so, Tom, I was watching this trailer and I thought, I started to relax. I thought, okay, that looks like fun. But then, as Amy said, the male entertainer that they hire for this bachelorette weekend.
Right.
Dies, so that's not funny.
No, but I mean, you've got to have movies are all about conflict, and so you got to throw that in there. And I mean, it looks in many respects. I did see a trailer to that. If you remember 9 to 5, where the three of them, they end up having to try to get out. I think it's you take a group, whether it's men or women or whoever it might be, that the audience is fond of, and, you know, give them some difficulty for a couple of hours. I think summer movies in particular are about escapism, kind of lighthearted escapism. And while, yeah, that's not necessarily funny, I think the situations are going to be enjoyable. If you can, my wife can't tend to do this. She gets too involved in it, and any conflict makes her nervous. But if you can just kind of step back and watch the silliness go on to somebody up on the screen, I think that at least is, it. We might not be laughing out loud, but it's lighthearted.
Well, what other silliness movies are there, Amy? Again, having gone through a lot of the list, there's not a lot of just pure silly besides Baywatch, which we talked about. Rough Night. Anything else?
There's another one that's sort of similar to Rough Night. It's called Girls Trip. I don't think anyone dies in this one. I'm not sure. At least not in the trailer. This one is in July. It's another R-rated comedy, I think really kind of aimed at women. Jada Pinkett Smith, Queen Latifah, Regina Hall are in this one. It's kind of like friends get together for a weekend of fun. And it really, if you look at the trailers back to back, they look very similar in terms of kind of what they're going for, you know, definitely R-rated comedy.
Let's take a call. And Phyllis is joining us from Guilford. Hi, Phyllis. You're on The Exchange. Thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Yes. Good morning.
Morning.
Thank you. I am a little late to compliment the gentleman that came up from Red River Theaters, because my friends and I generally come down to Red River Theaters to see all our movies. Because of the storylines, the small movies that they show all have interesting stories. And interestingly enough, a lot of the movies that they've shown here, like they did the dinner, we've read the books, so we to compare how the books rank with the movies.
Well, Phyllis, that's kind of impressive that you would drive, you know, all the way from Guilford just to see a movie.
It's only 40 minutes.
Yeah. I'm spoiled because I live in Concord. So you've got a standard movie house in Guilford, I think,
yes.
Phyllis. So you don't like any of those typical Hollywood things?
No. I'm all into the story.
All right. Phyllis.
Anything that's loud, I mean, I don't like to go in and have to put on little things in my ears to keep the noise level down. I think the last big pictures that I've seen that was, I did love The Lord of the Rings. I looked forward to those because I had read the books.
Well, so. Phyllis, thank you for calling in. And Amy, you know, there's a real, you know, there's a lot of mixing between the two audiences, but there's also some real, like my kids, for example, they're like, I don't want to go to one of those, you know, serious movies with you, Mom. And I have to, I'm kind of with Phyllis. Sometimes I got to put my hands over my ears.
Well, I mean, and that's definitely, and I think that's definitely kind of not just the summer, but the earlier part of the summer. One of the interesting things, you know, you've got like May and June and even parts of July where you kind of have one of these big, loud movies every weekend. And then as that starts to fade away, you get to see some other movies come through, even, you know, kind of mainstream theaters. You know, you mentioned The Beguiled. I don't exactly know what kind of theater that will play in, but that is not a big, loud, explodey movie that's going to play. You know, The Big Sick. That is a kind of a thinkier, more story-focused movie that I'm really interested in. There's a kind of a gothic-looking movie called My Cousin Rachel.
Oh,
with
I
Rachel
watched the
Weisz.
Trailer for that. Woo, that looks kind of creepy.
It does. It sort of looks like literary horror.
Yes.
And, you know, so I'm not sure when that'll hit screens locally. But you can find, and, you know, we mentioned An Inconvenient Sequel. You can find these movies throughout the summer. And especially towards the later part of the summer, they kind of filter through to more places, I've noticed.
That's interesting. So things tend to explode more.
Well, you've got
at the beginning of the summer.
Six screens of Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah, towards the and then, you know, as those movies, you just have one screen of them. You get a little bit more diversity towards the back of the summer, I've noticed.
So are they being the producers, are they looking more towards the Oscar nominations in the fall? Is that what that's about?
Well, I think you start to see those movies October usually, and then into like November, and then they all show up in December. And then for us here, that means December, January, and February that we get to see those movies.
And in many respects, I think that's because the Academy has a short attention span. And so as you're seeing things come out, to be nominated, it has to play in a major venue by December 31st. And so you'll see these Oscar-nominated films in November and December, so that once nominations come around in February, people will remember that. you have to, the studios will have to do real intense publicity campaigns to remind you of that great movie that came out in February.
The Big Sick, or Get Out, which came out earlier this year.
Right.
Great kind of horror movie that mixed horror, comedy, and social commentary. And I just hope everyone remembers it in December.
Right, but that's what
yeah.
it takes.
Well, and you can kind of understand why the producers do stuff later, because people are still talking about it. On the other hand, you have to have something in the summer.
Exactly.
Sure.
Big, loud explosions.
Well, and you can, it's like, while I love popcorn, I can't eat just popcorn. You have to have a little bit of a mixture. I love things exploding, but... And I think in some respects for box office, one of the worst things you can do is use the term art for a film, because it's going to shut off so many other people. But we go to art to learn about how to deal with situations, to be told about the human existence and the human condition. And let's face it, Guardians of the Galaxy, in some respects, does that. But that's not why we go to these things, and which is why I think it's so important that we have independent theater, independent film out there, and also... a nice, just take the summer chunk, and then the rest of the time maybe can show me, teach me a little something.
Although both of you said earlier that Planet of the Apes has some
reflective
quality to it.
You have to sneak
to
it in there. That's kind of the sad thing.
Well, you know, the smarter of these kinds of movies can work in, you know, a little bit of message, or if not necessarily message, but, you know, thinking about the bigger issues. And that's when you've really got, I think, a great movie, when it can be loud and explodey, but also have some smarts to it.
Well, there are a couple movies that are listed in more than one of these, you know, top 10 ratings of movies that you need to see, or top 25 this summer. And there are a couple, guys, that did have some cultural commentary. I'm just going to throw a couple of them out there that came across my radar and see if you guys want to talk about them. One is Detroit, about police abuse in Detroit.
With, I think Catherine Bigelow directs that one. Right. And that one looks really interesting. And I, that's one where it's like, I'm not quite sure when we'll get it here in New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. But that comes out, I think, in August.
So that's about the Algiers motel incident in which three black men were killed by police. So that's definitely got some, you know, some tough commentary. All Eyes on Me, about the rapper Tupac Shakur, and sort of the pressures on him to speak for the black community. So that's got some heavy-duty content there. One that sounds real interesting, Menashe, I hope I'm pronouncing it right, an ultra-Orthodox Jewish widower struggles after his wife dies. He doesn't want to remarry. His community tells him, no, you must. This is the way it's done. This takes place in Brooklyn, and it was filmed almost entirely in Yiddish, which I thought was really interesting.
Really?
The trailer to that one's interesting. Other movies that have kind of cultural commentary or political overtones that have caught your attention, Amy or Tom? Go ahead, Amy.
Well, there's one coming out in early June called, I think it's Megan Levy, and this one stars Kate Mara, and she plays a soldier who, at least based on the trailer, really comes to have a connection with the bomb-sniffing dog that she works with. And so it kind of shows, it. The trailer at least, and I think this is based on a true story, and it gives you the sense of, you know, someone who is looking to hang on to this dog, that this has become a really important relationship. And that could kind of get to, it looks like it gets to some interesting issues about service people and the things that they face when they come home.
Tom, do you want to jump in there?
Well, my only comment would really be that, excuse me, that I think being in New Hampshire, and for myself, I happen to live in Keene, and so we have some smaller venues there. It does become... that a viewer, if you're really looking for something like this, you have to work a little bit harder. And I think with the selective opportunities in major theaters, if you don't have a Red River around, you have to really search out these things. And so it does become kind of incumbent upon the viewer. Don't necessarily bemoan the fact that all there is are these huge major motion pictures out there with stuff blowing up. There's other stuff out there, but depending on where you are, you might have to work a little harder.
You might have to drive from Guilford to Concord.
Exactly, right.
Like our
caller Phyllis knows
earlier.
What's happening.
So how important is the influence of film festivals like Sundance or Cannes or Toronto? I mean, how much does that matter?
Well, that seems to be, you hear about some of those now, and then those are the movies that you see in theaters, you know, December or like around here, January or February. And it is interesting because you hear about all these, you know, great movies coming out of a festival, But you have no way to see them.
Yeah, it's kind of what Tom just said.
until well into the kind of much closer to award season.
It's such a value to the screen time that's available. You only have X number of screens available throughout the nation, and every single studio is vying for that screen time. And so I think that's the real value of things like Sundance and Cannes, is that it provides a venue for some real solid, smaller films. And so, in my opinion, the real value of those is distribution deals.
All right, two last questions for you. Now, we like to keep it positive, but are there any movies that you want to throw tomatoes at that you just think, ugh, why are we even bothering to spend money making this?
Well, I try to give everything a chance, but I am not looking forward to Transformers The Last Night.
Oh, my gosh.
Michael Bay directs, Mark Wahlberg returns. And that's one of those ones where I feel like, don't we have enough of these? Do we really need to keep going with these Transformer movies? I'm not excited about that one.
Tom?
There was something recently, and it's, I think, what I try to do, because I really do try to find something good to say about anything that I've seen. Boy, on a show a couple of weeks ago, I just really panned something, and I think I've just stuck it back so far in my mind I can't remember exactly what it was. So
you don't want to take up any more precious brain space. How are those Rotten Tomatoes? We had a caller who couldn't stay on who wanted to know how those Rotten Tomato assignments are made.
I think that's fan, or at least viewers. You hop online, you have to register at the site, and I think it's just like a collection, maybe like it's a Wikipedia movie review is my
understanding. And then critics, I guess. You could also look at the critics ones that are kind of an amalgamation of all those guys, too. Yeah.
Okay, so we talked a lot about summer. You first, Tom. What are you looking forward to in the fall?
Well, you build it up for me. Thank you so much. I've been looking forward for decades to the sequel to Blade Runner, which is one of my personal favorite films of all time. My understanding is that Harrison Ford, when he read this script, said it was the best script he had ever read.
And wait, so, Harrison Ford said that about Blade Runner?
Yeah, about the second one, about Blade Runner 2049, I think it's called. Because he didn't... I'm so into all of the mythos about the original film. My understanding is that he had such a horrible time with Ridley Scott that he doesn't even want to talk about the making of the original Blade Runner. And when he got this script, he said he was just kind of blown away. For the people who aren't familiar with it, Blade Runner was about a futuristic detective who has to hunt down, they're called replicants, and they're essentially humans, but who are created just to serve a certain purpose, and they only live a certain length of time. And so this picks up on that story.
Okay, so that's what you're looking forward to.
That's my favorite.
Okay, even though we've been talking about why do we keep redoing, this is a redo that you're excited
about. Yep, I'll
go
see that one, yeah.
Amy, how about you?
Yes, ignore everything I've said about sequels and redoing. Star Wars The Last Jedi. I'm really excited for that. That looks so fun. There's not to, you know, keep harping on it, but there's a female heroine. That looks really great. And I really enjoyed the continuation of this story. So I'm excited to see what they do next.
All right. Both of you, this has been great.
Thanks, Laura.
So much.
Thank you,
Tom,
so much.
Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Tom Cook, film professor at Keene State College. Amy Diaz, a pleasure as always. Thank you.
Thank you.
Amy Diaz, editor at The Hippo, where she reviews movies. And again, check back later today on our website for a list of some of the movies we talked about and other film-related events in New Hampshire. You can post your event there as well if you'd like. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.